Welcome into the Dean's List. Brief analysis, news, culture, from a biblical worldview.
Oh, the gospel.
This is the broadcast in which we seek to faithfully proclaim that the gospel indeed will overcome
a world full of sorrow by evil overrun.
It's Wednesday, April 16th, 2014.
Where darkness is veiled.
I'm Paul Dean.
The light of the sun. We know that the gospel.
Big government's exercise of power, overstepping of its bounds, takes on many forms these days, whether overt or subtle. But with each encroachment, or even attempted encroachment, a glimpse of things to come ought to open our eyes wide now. According to Fox News, Dr. Ben Carson is claiming the White House was offended by his now famous keynote address at the 2013 National Prayer Breakfast and asked at the time for an apology call to President Obama, which he did not make. The anecdote is found in Carson's upcoming book, One Nation, What We Can All Do to Save America's Future. Carson, who became a conservative sensation after the address, was highly critical of the direction of the country, though he never blamed the president, who was sitting just a few feet away. Quote, he did not appear to be hostile or angry, Carson wrote in the book, but within a matter of minutes after the conclusion of the program, I received a call from some of the prayer breakfast organizers saying that the White House was upset and requesting that I call the president and apologize for offending him. I said that I did not think that he was offended and that I didn't think that such a call was warranted. Well, here's a big question. Since when do elected officials request apologies in a free society? Obviously, one of the founding principles, one of the bedrock principles upon which the nation is founded is the issue of open dialogue, the issue of free speech, the issue of idea exchange, the issue of open and public debate. This is a free society. We engage one another in the realm of ideas. And the issue of the president being offended at such, well, that's an absurd idea as far as I'm concerned. He's not a king. He's an elected official. He works for us in a very real sense. Obviously, he's bound by the Constitution and to uphold the Constitution. But the reality is that we do engage in these kinds of dialogues, as we've noted. The idea that a private citizen should apologize for offending the president in this particular realm, it reveals the confusion that abounds in our culture. It reveals the confusion on the part of our government officials. It reveals confusion in the realm of political theory. And it reveals the attitude, the all-important attitude of those in power now, those in power arrogating more power to themselves, overstepping their bounds because, well, the Constitution is not that important to them. It is further evidence of further erosion of our founding principles. Indeed, one would not necessarily put this in the realm of, well, liberty, but when you look at this in the context of the whole, when you look at the arrogance of such a request, indeed, we are talking about a loss of liberty. As Christians, we are respectful of others, but we don't apologize for the truth. In fact, let me put it this way, we proclaim it. Marijuana is in the news these days. For the first time, researchers at Northwestern University have analyzed the relationship between casual use of marijuana and brain changes and found that young adults who used cannabis just once or twice a week showed significant abnormalities in two important brain structures. Now, listen to this. The study's findings, to be published Wednesday in the Journal of Neuroscience, are similar to those of past research linking chronic long-term marijuana use with mental illness and changes in brain development. Quote, there were abnormalities in their working memory, which is fundamental to everything you do, said Dr. Hans Breiter, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, told this to Fox News. He said further, when you make judgments or decisions, plan things, do mathematics, Anything you do always involves working memory. It's one of the core fundamental aspects of our brains that we use every day. So given those findings, we decided we need to look at casual recreational use. Well, because these brain regions are central for motivation, the findings from Northwestern help support the well-known theory that marijuana use leads to a condition called amotivation, also called amotivational syndrome. This psychological condition causes people to become less oriented towards their goals and purposes in life, as well as seem less focused in general. Now, on the one hand, when you pare away some of the psychological language here, you find something very disturbing. Obviously, casual, recreational use of marijuana does, in fact, affect the brain. Now, these are neurological studies that we're talking about here, not mere guesswork. And on the one hand, the Bible does say that God has given all things for our benefit. And because of that, some have made the argument, even Christians have made the argument for, well, the recreational use of marijuana. They liken it to alcohol. They talk about the fact that the Bible does not forbid alcohol totally, but rather says that alcohol is a gift from God and can be used in moderation. We certainly understand that argument. On the other hand, marijuana use is different. There's only one purpose, it seems to me. I'm not experienced in this area, but based upon observation, it seems to me there's only one purpose for the use of marijuana, and that is to have one's faculties impaired beyond what the scriptures would allow. That's part of the problem with being drunk, and this is why the scriptures forbid it, because when a person is drunk, not only does he lose control of certain physical properties and abilities, and obviously the more drunk a person is, the worse it gets, but when a person is drunk and is no longer in control of what he does, or perhaps what he says, or maybe the barriers are brought down just a bit, and that person is willing to say things that he would never say if he were not under the influence of alcohol, well, all of a sudden, we're under the control of a foreign substance rather than under the control of the Holy Spirit, rather than under the control of the biblical wisdom that we would normally have. And these things are problematic because, obviously, they don't glorify God, and they tend to bring harm in one way or another. And so when I think of marijuana use, I think the person who takes that first drag is already beyond the limit. Some may take issue with that. You'll have to inform me if I'm wrong. But think about this research. Here we have research that's talking about the deleterious effects on the brain of even casual marijuana use. And no one would make the argument that, well, we ought to be able to casually use poison, some poison from some poisonous plant. So when you appeal to the Bible that says that all things are given for our benefit, the question is, what is the benefit of this particular plant? Poison is beneficial. We use poison for good things, but we certainly don't ingest it personally that it might kill us, for example. And so when we're talking about marijuana, no doubt there's some good uses, but recreational use doesn't seem to be one of them. Here's the problem. In our feel-good, experiential culture, I'm looking for market solutions here. I'm praying and working for the day when recreational use of marijuana becomes anathema. I'm old enough to remember when cigarettes were cool. I'm old enough to remember when the television ads were all about the fact that women have come a long way. We're all about the fact that you weren't cool unless you smoked the cigarette. And we've moved from that to the knowledge of the potential danger from cigarette smoking. And while I certainly allow people the freedom to smoke those cigarettes, and while I'm not personally offended at folk who do in fact smoke, at the same time, in our culture, it's not thought of in the same way that it once was. That is cigarette smoking. And so I'm praying for the day that recreational marijuana use will be seen as anathema. And that's part of our message as Christians. Yes, the proper use of things that God has given us, and our obligation to point out when things are harmful. And of course, I'm not talking about being harsh, not talking about being judgmental. We're talking about loving concern. We're talking about conversation. We're talking about perhaps engaging the same way as these researchers have engaged. They are genuinely concerned that marijuana, even casual use of marijuana, has destructive results. And my fear is that young people in general who have a tendency to cast off authority, young people have a tendency to cast off tradition, even Christian young people have a tendency to not be students of history, and quite frankly, not be students of much anything else, unfortunately, these days. My concern is young people and what's going to happen to them. Our culture is a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag of oppression on many fronts, and yet it's a culture which is pushing for freedom on many other fronts. Freedom in terms of sexuality, freedom in terms of drug use. But with freedom comes responsibility. And if we're not responsible, then all we're going to do is destroy our freedom, both personally and culturally. It's the gospel that frees us from sin. It's the gospel that frees us from foolishness. And it's the gospel that frees us from the need for an experience. If our satisfaction is in Christ, then Mary Jane won't look so good. Well, over at Old Life, D.G. Hart has something interesting to say. He's talking about the environment. Listen to this. He says, while visiting Notre Dame this week, I encountered bathrooms that had gone green. That is, they had signs that instructed me, while still giving me the option, that using an electric hand dryer was environmentally positive, while using paper towels was environmentally insensitive. Why, I wondered, was something that required electricity more eco-friendly than a piece of paper that could be recycled? Confused, I wiped my hands on my pants. Well, I don't blame him for the confusion. I find myself in that same dilemma. But he says this, later I received a little help for my confusion and embarrassment from an article at Slate. Now, I'm not going to read the entire article, but I want you to hear an excerpt here. Listen to this. Calculating the impact of electric dryers is easy enough. A fair amount of energy goes into manufacturing metal goods and mechanical parts. But the fact that dryers last so long, typically between 7 and 10 years, means that production accounts for a negligible part of the hardware's total energy consumption. The vast majority of a dryer's environmental toll stems from the electricity it requires. A typical warm air dryer uses around 2,200 watts of power when switched on, plus about 2 watts while in standby mode. If you dry your hands for 30 seconds, as opposed to the 43 seconds required to get them fully water-free, then you're using about 0.018 kilowatt hours of electricity. Now stay with me. Don't go to sleep on this. Don't have too much further to read, but hear them out. Do that 3 times a day for a year. Your insistence on dry hand decorum has run you 19.71 kilowatts of electricity, which translates into roughly 26.61 pounds of carbon dioxide emissions. Now, there are several variables that can complicate the hand dryer equation. The first is the emergence of a new generation of dryers. Now, this is important. Such as the Accelerator and the Dyson Airblade. They claim to be at least 80% more efficient than their forerunners, due in part to much shorter drying times. You also need to consider how your local power grid generates its electricity. The more coal that is used, the more carbon a dryer will generate per kilowatt hour. Now, here's the critical sentence. As always, you can check out your grid's fuel mix by using the Environmental Protection Agency's Power Profiler tool. Now, here's my first question. Is anyone going to check out your grid's fuel mix by using the Environmental Protection Agency's Power Profiler tool? I'm certainly not going to do that. And, of course, the folk at Slate go on. They talk about how that these complications with the hand dryers pale in comparison, however, with those that bedevil the life cycle assessment of paper towels. But I won't get into that. Here's what D.G. Hart says. On the one hand, maybe the best option is for all of us to imitate professional golfers and carry around our own personal hand towel. Well, I might do that, but then again, I won't. Yes, there is the issue of stewardship. We have to be good stewards of the earth that God has given us. But the reality is, when folk are up in arms the way that they are about the environment, it demonstrates that they have a one-world view. It demonstrates that this world is all they know, that this world in their minds is all there is. And if this world is not preserved, well, then that's the ultimate crime. That's the ultimate shame. But the reality is there are two worlds. There's this world and there's the world to come. And we are simply passing through here. Yes, we're to be good stewards, but this is not our home. This is not ultimate. And we know that there is a day coming in which this world as it is will be no more. There will be a renovated new heavens and a new earth. At the same time, though we are looking forward to that great day, we do live in the here and now, and yes, we are to be good stewards, but God's commandments are not burdensome. He doesn't expect us to go to the local power company and try to calculate how much power we're using or what the net effect of our paper towel use is when we go to the, when we go to the restroom and in a public place. He doesn't expect us to do that. He's given us resources to use. That's the beauty of it. That's the goodness of God. He's put resources in the earth for us to cultivate, for us to use, for His glory. And the reality is, it is not a zero-sum game. We're not going to run out of resources. And not only that, there are resources that are yet undiscovered. There are more efficient uses of the resources that we're using now. And that's why God has given us brains. That's why over time, we're going to subdue the earth more and more. These resources, but for our good, they're to be used with joy. Here's the reality. When I go into a public restroom, I use plenty of paper towels. I want to get my hands dry. I want to get them completely dry. And when there's an electric dryer on the wall, I turn that thing on. I crank it up as high as it'll go. And the reality is, if it's winter, I might stay in there longer than the, prescribed 30 seconds, longer than the required 43 seconds. Who knows how long I might hold my hands under that dryer, because I like that warm air. But here's the reality. I use all those paper towels. I use that electric hand dryer. I do it all for the glory of God. You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news and culture from a biblical worldview. Sign up to receive The Dean's List via email, along with other items of interest, at DeansListCommentary@gmail.com, or simply go to our website, trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources. I'm Paul Dean. Join me next time for The Dean's List.